Good afternoon, members. Welcome to the Choice and Innovation Subcommittee, and welcome to all that are in the audience. We will now call this meeting to order. Andrea, please call the roll.
Chair Rizzo?
Here.
Vice Chair Michael?
Here.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Present.
Representative Altman?
Here.
Representative Amnesty?
Here.
Representative Baker?
Here.
Representative Bankson?
Here.
Representative Basabi?
Here.
Representative Chambliss?
He's coming.
Representative Dunkley?
Here.
Representative Garcia? Representative McLean?
Here.
Representative Nixon is excused. Representative Persons Malika?
Here.
Representative Porras?
Here.
Representative Roach is excused. Representative Stark?
Here.
Representative Waldron?
Here.
We have quorum.
Thank you. Members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. I'd like to ask members in the audience and our members on the committee to please silence all your electronic devices. Committee members, please remember to ensure that your microphones are on while you speak and after are turned off after you've been recognized and spoken. Members, this afternoon we have two bills on our agenda. I will now turn over the gavel to our Vice Chair, Representative Michael, as I will present the PCB from the podium up front. Chair, would you please? Oh. Thank you. The chair is yours.
Members, we will now take up PCB CIS 2401 relating to education. Chair Rizzo, you are recognized to explain the PCB.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair. Members, last year, Florida Legislature passed House Bill 1, which included provisions regarding the deregulation of public schools. In an effort to provide more flexibility and efficiency and reduce unnecessary regulation, the bill required the State Board of Education to develop and recommend to the governor and legislature for adoption during the 2024 legislative session repeals and revisions to the Florida Early Learning 20 Education Code. As part of their work, the Department of Education worked with many stakeholders, and the proposed committee bill before us today reflects many of their recommendations and priorities of this body. The PCB provides flexibility for district school boards in the following ways. It authorizes flexibility in publishing public notices related to meetings, levying millage, and adoption of budgets by authorizing the publication of such notices to school district websites. It repeals several obsolete and overly burdensome reporting requirements, including the school district guidance report, the summary of economic security report, and the school district report on the reduction of relocatable use. It specifies that collective bargaining may not preclude a district school board from carrying out its constitutional and statutory duties related to implementing school improvement, student discipline, school safety plans, and implementing and providing recognition and incentive programs. It provides flexibility for school boards to adopt exceptions to the state requirements for educational facilities and removes limitations on delegating the approval of construction change orders. And it broadens the scope of properties that the school district can lease or lease purchase to include educational plants, ancillary plants, and auxiliary facilities instead of only educational facilities. To support early learning and K-12 instructional personnel, the PCB requires the DOE to develop written strategies to address state board-identified critical teacher shortages in our state. It authorizes school districts to develop and adopt their own policies relating to mentors and support for first-time teachers, and provides a newly hired VPK instructor with 30 days to complete required literacy course training. It aligns the GPA requirements of the teacher apprenticeship program with those for a professional certificate, currently a 2.5 GPA, and it authorizes the Florida Institute for Charter School Innovation to develop a professional learning system to enable teachers at charter schools to add on coverages and endorsements to their teaching certificates. And Madam Vice Chair, that is the bill.
Chair Rizzo, having explained the bill, members, are there any questions on the PCB? Okay. Democratic ranking member.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Rizzo, I know like you, we got this at the very last minute last night. And in reading this, I know that we'll have time to work through these enhancements and work through them. But can you help me elaborate a little bit more on the flexibility of school districts being able to advertise?
I'm sorry.
No.
Chair Rizzo, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Yes, Ranking Member, this bill will eliminate the need for school districts to only advertise in newspapers, for example. They will be able to advertise on their websites. And I think that as time goes on, as technology kind of moves on, Gen Xers and baby boomers are less into publications that are actually on paper, and more into the digital age. So I think this allows for a lot of flexibility there. Something else that I might add is that this would also help with costs involved in advertising in such publications. And if I might add as well, if you would allow me, Madam Vice Chair, a little bit of leeway, this entire PCB has no foreseeable impact, fiscal impact at all for our state.
So basically gives, thank you, Madam Chair. So it basically gives the school districts the flexibility or the choice to remain, to be able to still advertise in your local newspaper and or digitally.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Yes, absolutely. Choice, it gives them the choice, and this is the Choice and Innovation Subcommittee, so that's what we're about.
Follow up.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. On a different note, how are we helping to mitigate the staff and teacher shortage? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
You're recognized to answer.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. For example, if you look at on page 9 of 40. Beginning on line 214, we've got newly hired pre-kindergarten instructors may complete the 3 emergent literacy training courses within 30 calendar days after being hired if the instructor has not previously completed the courses. Again, this gives a little bit of a landing path, more or less, to be able to hire teachers and get them trained and get them certified while they're actually in the classroom and getting there. Okay, that's just one of the references. We've also got some some leeway when it comes to professional development programs and training and mentoring programs that I've mentioned before. I could get very specific with you. I've got it all kind of highlighted right here with all of my tabs. But again, what we're trying to do is remove roadblocks, if you will, bureaucracy. We're trying to allow for the nimbleness of the creativity within our school districts to be able to come up with ways to offset these shortages, and especially in the critical shortage areas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Chambliss, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hey, Chair, how are you?
How are you?
I have two questions, ma'am. Know there's several things that are in the Senate version of this bill that we don't see in this particular version. Could you let us know at what stage are we in the conversation between the House and the Senate on those potential additions? Do you think that this bill is going to move closer to the Senate version, or is it still too early to tell?
You're recognized, Ms. Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Representative, thanks for that question. Currently, I am not in any sort of negotiation with any of the senators or anyone from the Senate. I could tell you that I did see the press conference after the Senate passed its versions off of the floor, and they said that they were looking forward to some negotiations. I can guarantee you that everything that you see within this PCB is in those two Senate versions, or whatever they have. I think it's 7002 and 7000. But currently, I could tell you that this is what we have before us. And I think it is great. I think that there is a lot in here that we are allowing flexibility for. And again, removing a lot of overburdensome regulation. Now, is this the final product of the bill? I can tell you that this is my fourth session, along with you. Before us, we have Representative Porras, who was my LA for two of those sessions. And we've carried, we started off with education bills in every single one of those sessions. And I can guarantee you that I think I've hit the 100 club when it comes to amendments, if you total all the bills together. So I would say that this probably would not be the final version of the bill, seeing as how this is the first stop. But what we have before us is what I'm ready to talk about.
Thank you very much for answering that, Chair. Any further questions? Okay, seeing that we do not have any further questions from the members, do we have any appearance notices? We have an appearance card for Cheryl Statter. And you wish to appear in person.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a business called FedNet, and what I do is help school districts navigate federal education programs. So I know red tape when I see it, and believe me, it's a full-time job. I want to thank you for the work that's already gone into this bill that will be tremendously helpful for Florida schools and districts. And I would ask that you consider adding some particular language from the Senate version concerning federal Title I funds. Unfortunately, this is an area where you wouldn't think this is possible, but Florida's actually added more red tape on top of federal red tape. I don't know whether that makes it redder or just more, but it's a lot. In 2016, there was some language added to the statute. It's had a lot of really negative effects on kids and schools. Title I funds is meant for our poorest students and our schools with the highest concentrations of poverty. So that language has actually caused less money to go to schools because more schools enter poverty and districts can't make the adjustments that they need to make. It's resulted in mid-year funding cuts to schools because the feds change the calculations all the time and districts can't soften the blow because they're not allowed to under state law. Schools have been unable to hire staff because of instability in this in the funding. I liked it when you said we want to promote innovation. This stifles innovation at the district level due to this red tape. It delays funding from the state. And basically, it adds to widespread confusion in an already very complicated program. And I've been dealing with this program for almost 30 years. To my knowledge, Florida is the only state that for the nearly 60 years of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act's existence has ever imposed additional restrictions on the use of Title I funds. I would ask that this committee strongly consider this language and please stop nickel and diming districts in the use of federal funds. It just makes it harder to help kids. And I am absolutely available to you anytime to explain to whatever depth you can tolerate. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Adler. We also have Bishop Barney waving in support. Keith Flaw waving in support. And that is it for our appearance notices. After all appearances, we've read them already. Members, we are now in debate. Is there anyone wishing to debate the bill? Vice Chair Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I do appreciate this PCB coming and the ability to deregulate our public schools and afford the opportunities to untie hands and untie opportunities, missed opportunities, if you will, for our students. So I'm excited about this particular bill. I am looking forward to working with you, Representative Rizzo, to continue to bring this, make this PCB a lot better by maybe bringing some of the things from the Senate side that we, you know, could possibly enhance the experiences of our school districts and being able to continue to educate our children with excellence. So I will be up on the bill today and looking forward to the next few weeks of conversations on moving this particular piece of legislation forward. Thank you for bringing it through.
Representative Bankston, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, and Mr. Chair. Thank you for taking the time with me this afternoon. Again, this has all come to us in a very short amount of time. Different constituents having different concerns, and you explained it very well at the beginning. Many of those are not in this bill. This is what we're dealing with today before us, and the process. I appreciate that, as Representative Chambliss mentioned as well, that as we go forward, we have opportunities to look at any of those concerns that may still result here. But much of the concern that was spoken to me has already, it's not here before us. And so I appreciate as we move forward, I'll be up on this bill, and I thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Chambliss, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair and Chair. Thank you for presenting this bill. It's always good to know that we have representatives who have a passion for education, who have a passion for students, and a passion for the teachers and staff that work with our students on a daily basis. We know that there have been a lot of concerns, and the fact that we're taking upon the challenge of looking at how we can make teachers' life easier, how we can make the process easier through deregulation. Very, very proud of this particular day. I am very interested in seeing where this goes. I do know there are some things that are in the Senate bill that I think are very good, and you know we definitely should keep our mind open. So I'm proud that you're the one carrying this one, and I'll be with you every step of the way to make sure that we get to a good product on the floor. Thank you.
Any further debate, members? Okay, Chair Rizzo, you are recognized to close on PCB CIS 2401.
Thank you, Vice Chair. So, members, thank you very much for the conversations that we've had, for the questions, for the great comments. I look forward to working with each and every one of you and each and every member of this body as we move forward. I I do agree with you, Representative Chambliss, that there's room to keep going. We've got a lot of regulation out there, and I think we want to do that. We want to do that in a very thoughtful manner as we move forward. And we want to make sure that, like you said, that our passion for children that every single one of you shares, along with me and our staff and our speaker, is paramount in every decision that we make and everything that we do with this PCB moving forward. I do want to thank our staff that has just been amazing with getting everything together. And even though the PCB came out this week, we've had conversations for weeks as to what we want to do, how we want to do this, and where we want to get. And so there has been a lot of thought. There's been a lot of deliberation. And so I want to thank the speaker and Chair Masullo also for having the trust in me to carry this PCB forward. And with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Chair Rizzo, having closed on the bill, Andrea, please call the roll.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Representative Amnesty?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Bankson?
Yes.
Basabi?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Nixon is excused. Persons Malika?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Roach is excused. Stark?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
And Chair Rizzo?
Oh, yes.
Members, by your vote, PCB CIS 2401 will be reported favorably.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Vice Chair, may I take back the gavel?
For just a minute.
It's what it feels like when I'm around you. Okay. Thank you. Very well, members, we will now get back to the second bill on our agenda. We will now hear from the chair of the K-12 Educational Appropriations Subcommittee, the newly wedded, congratulations.
Thank you.
Chair Tomko.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Sorry, my entrance and exit will not be as dramatic as yours have been, but thank you for that. Well, thank you, members. Last year, we passed one of the largest expansions of school choice in the nation, which has enabled more parents to choose the education that meets the needs of their student. While hundreds of thousands of families have been benefited from these scholarship programs, there have been issues with providing funds and the time frame we would expect. To address these issues, HB 1403 establishes separate application and renewal deadlines for the scholarship programs so that renewals can be funded earlier. Any applications received after the deadline will be considered for the funding for the next year funding. Payment for full-time tuition and fees must be made by the scholarship funding organization within 7 business days of approval by the parent and the school. To address concerns about educational options available to students, the bill allows the Personalization Education Program students, or PEP scholarship students, to use their funds for when instruction is provided away from school under a student learning plan. Members, as you remember, during special session, we took steps to address the unprecedented demand for the FES UA scholarship. Because interest in the scholarship continues to grow, HB 1403 increases the annual growth in the number of the new FES UA scholarships from 3% to 5% of the ESE population. If demand ever exceeds 95% of capacity again, the bill allows an increase of an additional 1% the following year. The bill also clarifies eligibility by removing an age limitation for 3 to 4 year old students with disabilities and allows for military families to qualify based on permanent change of station orders. Finally, the bill also increases transparency by requiring SFOs to report on the performance metrics related to application and reimbursement requests and to solicit feedback from parents, private schools, and providers prior to implementing substantial modifications to the reimbursement process. Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Very well, Chair Tomko. Having explained the bill, members, are there any questions? Representative Stark, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Tomko, for speaking with me prior to the meeting. But just in reference to the question that I had, could you explain to everyone else in reference to the scholarship, the HOPE scholarship, and what will be happening with those?
Absolutely, and thank you so much for taking time to chat today. With the HOPE scholarship, we have seen since now we have universal school choice that scholarship is no longer needed because a parent can choose at any point in time when their child needs to be moved to another school. So as the HOPE scholarship is for the bullied and harassed students, those students will still be in the FTC scholarships. However, the parents will not have to wait for an incident to occur to move their student.
Representative, any follow-up? Okay, thank you. Any other questions, members? Representative Waldron, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for this bill. We talk about the deadlines, which I hope will help with the funding issue. And I think one of the questions I had pertaining to that is there currently a requirement that private schools notify the Department of Education when a voucher-receiving student withdraws from the school for any reason?
You're recognized.
Yes, the scholarship funding organization is aware of that.
Okay. Representative, follow-up?
I ask that because I've been hearing from some superintendents that are saying that when a student comes back to the public school, the funding doesn't necessarily always, there seems to be an issue. And I don't know whether that's something they need to address directly with the DOE, but that still seems to be an issue. So,
Representative, with the funding not following, I'm trying to follow if there's a question in there.
Question is, do you agree with that?
Representative?
So that is, thank you for that question. That is why we have put those deadlines into place in this legislation, is so that way we can have more predictability on those students and who will be coming in to and fro and what school. And so that is our whole plan with these deadlines put into place. So thank you for that concern and question mark at the end.
Thank you very much. That's it.
Okay. We will now go to Representative Bankson.
Thank you, Chair. Couple of questions here, if I may. One, you had just spoken to Representative Stark regarding the HOPE scholarship, and you know, I've had, again, constituents' concerns about that. I think what has been good about that is the immediacy of its access, such as in a bullying situation, sometimes there's an immediate need to move a child. Is there still that access to these other scholarships, or is that going to slow it down? We just don't want to lose hope.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is still the accurate, plan in place for those students, and they will be able to be helped and gotten out of whatever situation might be, put forward to them. And that's why we, with the expansion of school choice and what we did last year, the big focus is now parents don't have to wait for a situation to be escalated to a situation where your child comes home with a black eye. If you know that something is going on, that parent can rectify that situation and that child can move to whatever school that parent sees fit.
Follow up, sir?
Yes, and I apologize not being able to get to you before this. Again, thank you for that. And I'm just looking forward as we go through that process to be able to answer those with confidence to the people back home. The second area, of course, deals with the scope of expenditures. And that's been the question. Why is it limited to these four key components or five key components of education, and why not these others? And we did have some good discussion about that, but I would like to know your perspective behind that. Thank you.
You're recognized.
I would like to say stay tuned. I have an amendment coming up.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Quite the cliffhanging, response. Ranking Member Valdez for questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and congratulations.
Thank you.
But Representative, thank you for the work that you've done on this. And on page 11 of staff analysis is where it's described the new application windows and when parents must decline or accept. So for instance, for new scholarship for the FTC PEP and the FTC full-time private, from February 1st to April 30th is the application window, and then the parents must accept or decline by May 31st. And the renewal also has the same application window and the same accept or denial date by the parent of May 31st. I think that's going to give ample time for the processes for a start date of August 10th, whatever the date of first day of school is. Now, my question is, does the DOE have a deadline as to when those dollars need to be dispersed to the SFOs so that then the SFOs could then send those dollars to those particular schools?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I believe that answer is 14 days.
Any follow-up, ranking member?
Well, the follow-up was, I think I'm going to have to stay tuned because I think it has to do with the expenditures as well. So I'll stay tuned for the amendment, and we'll go from there.
Very well.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions for the chair? Representative Chambliss, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Tom Kyle, thank you for talking with me about this bill and some of the pieces to it. I just, for clarification's purpose, just wanted to go back to the UA wait list for a while. And, you know, I know that there is a mechanism and if not, in place in, you know, this bill and also an activation mechanism if we see that the wait list is still there. Do we think that this would address the wait list in its current state? Or do we think that we're going to kind of have to kind of wait and see a couple of years to see if this actually helps to address the wait list in totality?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. We were actually provided numbers yesterday on what that forecast looks like. And so we do feel confident that the change from 3% to 5% will be suitable. But however, in this bill, we did say that if the demand exceeds 95% of capacity again, it allows for an additional 1% increase.
Any follow-up? Okay. Any other questions? Vice Chair Michael, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you so much for answering all of my questions, because I got a lot of emails, I'm sure, like probably most of the members here, just confusion, I think, from the parents' sides. For me, particularly the homeschool parents that homeschool their children, and you really brought clarity as far as they were under the understanding, reading through the bill, that they were somehow losing access to certain curriculum that they could teach their children that weren't listed in the bill. And you really had a very good follow-up with that and explanation. Do you care to elaborate on that a little more? Is there anything else you want to add to it? Because I wanted to make sure I understand that for instance, I'll say this. I'm sorry, Chair.
I think you posed the question already, and I'm sure Chair Tomko knows exactly how to answer that one. Then we'll get to it. You're recognized.
Thank you so much. And that kind of goes along with what Representative Bankson's question was about the instructional material. So we do have an amendment that is going to be coming up that will kind of provide some clarity. But when we did discuss, you and I, so I'll touch on this since it's been brought up, so we can bypass the question in the next amendment. But we did say that in the amendment, it will be for those subject matters, but that will allow for those parents to still have their children enrolled in those extracurriculars. And I believe the comment I made to you is it'll allow for the student to be able to ride the horse for a lesson, but you can't purchase the horse. And so we will kind of dive into that a little further in the amendment, and it'll bring clarity to what we meant by that.
Any further questions? Okay, members, any questions on the bill before we get to amendments? Okay. Oh, on that, right. But we're getting to it, right? Thank you. Very well. We do have some few amendments. Chair Tomko, you are recognized to explain Amendment 265301.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment clarifies the use of scholarship funds for instructional materials under the FES, EO, and FTC programs. Under the amendment, any equipment used as instructional materials may only be purchased for subjects in language arts and reading, mathematics, social studies, and science. That is the amendment.
Very well. Members, do we have any questions on the amendment? Representative Bankson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thank you for the program here. I stayed tuned. So basically, that literally means then, because of the homeschooling issue, we're not going in and inspecting homes. So there's a desire to respect that privacy. Therefore, we can't control if someone says, I need a computer, let's say, and they go out and spend $4,000 on that. We don't want to micromanage that. So that's, as I understand, the purpose for having this, so that we don't have to go into all of those side avenues and deal with that. Is that accurate?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. So just for example, what we are saying here is if a scholarship student, they would be authorized to purchase, for example, a microscope or goggles for science. However, if it is not in these subject matters, they are not able to purchase equipment. They are still, however, able to enroll in the course or the lesson, but they will not be able to purchase that equipment. So only if it is strictly for those subject matters can they purchase equipment.
Representative, follow up. Yeah. Any other questions on the amendment? Very well. No further questions. We do have appearance cards on the amendment. Would Mr. Nathan Hoffman from the Foundation for Florida's Future please come to the mic? You're waving in support. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. And those are all the appearance cards. Members, we're now on debate on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? Oh. Ranking Member Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate this amendment. It clarifies what the expenditures are and, you know, what they're able to be used for. So I'm hoping that parents understand that, you know, if I'm not mistaken, for instance, for PE, I think that parents that homeschool can also, if they want their kids to experience a PE class, that they can call their neighborhood school, public school, and see, hey, can my child go into PE? So there are opportunities out there to have that well-rounded education that we all want for all of our kids. So I thank you for bringing this forward, and I'm up on this amendment.
Very well. Members, any other debate on the amendment? Representative Chambliss, you're recognized.
Very quickly, Mr. Chair, thank you for answering my question on this particular amendment. Your clarification between instructional material and equipment, and that instructional material, our instruction opportunities are still able to be purchased. But this clarifies about equipment, helped me get to a good landing spot. So I appreciate you taking the time to do so.
Do we have any other debate on the amendment? Very well, seeing none. Chair Tomko, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
We've closed.
Very well. Having closed on our amendment, all those in favor of the adoption of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed? No noes? Okay, by your vote, the amendment is adopted. We will now move on to the second amendment. Chair Tomko, you are recognized to explain Amendment 516899.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. The amendment clarifies that a parent can only apply for one scholarship at a time, whether under FES or FTC scholarship programs, and that is the amendment.
Very well. Having explained her amendment, members, are there questions on this amendment? Ranking Member Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't mean to be funny or flippant, but was that a thing? Were people actually applying for two scholarships and getting them?
You are recognized.
They were not getting them, but they were applying for multiple scholarships that would cause a huge delay for them receiving the funds for the scholarship that they actually needed. So we're hoping that this just eliminates that confusion and expedites the process. We are trying to, in this legislation, learn from some of the hiccups that have been throughout this process and just make sure that this is as streamlined as process as it can be for this process. So that is where this originates from. Welcome.
Members, any other questions on the amendment? Very well. Seeing none, do we have any appearance cards on the amendment? And we have none. We will now move into debate on the amendment. Is there any debate on the amendment? Very well. Seeing none, Chair Tomko, you are recognized to close on your amendment. And waiving closed. All those in favor for the adoption of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All opposed say no. By your vote, show the amendment is adopted. Very well. We are now back on the bill as amended. Are there any public appearance cards on the bill? And we have a few. We have Audra Schutzman, from a parent of child at International Community School. She is appearing. Please make your way up to the podium. And up next, we will hear from Regina Piazza. You're recognized.
Good afternoon.
Make sure the mic is on and approach the mic.
Okay, I got it. My name is Audra Schuckman, and my three children attend International Community School in Winter Park and are all recipients of the Unique Abilities Scholarship. I have been writing legislators for over a year to try and have my children's school that I chose to best meet their educational needs become eligible for state scholarships. At the beginning of the summer, we were told that UA and PEP would be accepted at our school under the homeschool category because of our hybrid model. However, 1 week before school began, we found out that this was incorrect and we could not use either scholarship at our school. Our school would like to be an eligible private school for scholarship compliance so every family can benefit from the scholarships. However, the definition of regular and direct contact for private school compliance states that contact with the teacher must occur on campus 5 days a week. This rule blocks International Community School from becoming a participating private school in scholarship programs, even though we are licensed by the state of Florida as an accredited private school. House Bill 1403 is proposing a change to this rule, but the language only includes PEP students. How is it that PEP students can attend the exact same hybrid school and receive scholarships, but the students choosing to enroll as private school students to obtain private school privileges are excluded from the scholarships? I encourage you to amend the current language to allow regular and direct contact for private school students to include 3 days of teacher-led on-campus instruction combined with 2 days of trained parent-led instruction utilizing curriculum prescribed by the private school. To be truly inclusive and support school choice, which is the intention of this bill, hybrid schools, which are licensed as private schools by the state of Florida, should not be discriminated again in participating in state scholarships. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We now have Ms. Piazza, and on deck we will have Ms. Bethany Martin.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Regina Piazza. I am in Okaloosa County, and I'm a 12-year classical conversations home educating mother of three. And I stand before you today in opposition to the bill, most specifically for the HOPE Scholarship. And in that, it has been said that families don't need it anymore. It has also been said that there's no reason for the HOPE Scholarship because HB1 remedied that, and now everyone receives the money. According to the independent entity that provides the annual evaluation on the HOPE Scholarship recipients, there are a variety of challenges in receiving that scholarship. And those are, the schools were uncooperative or hesitant or unwilling to provide the form. However, 70% who did eventually receive those forms did not experience challenges with the actual application process. Former school engagement, they said 50% state that the schools did not care for, take action, or was in an unsafe environment. Interestingly, though, most parents either found out about the program from another source, not affiliated with the school, or found it on their own. Interestingly also is that the Florida Assessor reports, the School Environmental Safety Incident Reporting System, reports that pre-COVID Assessor reports were 55,000, whereas it jumped to 108,000 in the 2021-22 school year. So the expansion for optional contributions would be something to consider. And in closing, with an extraordinary of to date, $357,258,129 of opt-in constituent contributions that are available within 24 hours, not within a quarterly window, to the victims, and without the strings attached. I propose instead of repealing HOPE Scholarship that let us focus our attention on a couple of things: reviewing the school bullying prevention education program, climate, code of conduct for students in each public school. I propose that we prioritize the mandatory posting and provision of the school of the scholarship by the school districts. Let us prioritize accountability within the school district, and let us prioritize honoring the constituents who have opted in to supporting HOPE Scholarship. Therefore, let us prioritize the victims, the citizens, the children, the families, and the communities of Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, let us prioritize and not lose hope. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now hear from Ms. Bethany Martin from the International Community School, and up next will be Ms. Crystal Crawford representing herself. Ms. Martin, you're recognized.
Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm here today to represent the International Community School, which is a licensed and accredited private school in Winter Park that utilizes the hybrid model, which meets on campus 3 days a week under the supervision of certified teachers and has a two-day home education plan utilizing teacher-directed lesson plans. House Bill 1403, as it currently is written, and as I understand it, continues to exclude ICS and other hybrid schools from being eligible private schools simply because the current language states that private schools must maintain regular and direct contact with a teacher at the private school's physical location for 5 days a week. HB 1403 expands this requirement only for PEP students, which only requires 2 days of regular contact at the private school's location. My question is, why are PEP students allowed to receive financial support and scholarships for the exact same hybrid model education while private school students are not given the same consideration while they attend ICS or other hybrid schools that require greater oversight and accountability than some PEP programs? International Community School is licensed by the state of Florida and is accredited by several organizations such as CSI, Cognia, North Central Association Commission, and SACS. We take all records and grades, and annual testing is maintained by the school. High school students get a regular transcript. We own our own land, 26 years ago, we created an innovative and exciting school environment for students. And under former Governor Rick Scott, we were challenged to continue this in a way of innovation, but now we're being penalized because we don't meet exactly 5 days a week. We are asking to be afforded the same privileges and as other private schools and as PEP students in regards to participating in the scholarships. We implore you to amend the current language to allow regular and direct contact for private school students, to include 3 days of teacher-led on-campus instruction combined with 2 days of highly trained parent-led instruction utilizing the curriculum prescribed by the private school. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. And I just want to clarify, are you a proponent of this bill or an opponent of this bill?
I'm proponent of the bill
With a caveat that you just explained?
With a caveat that language needs to be changed to include hybrid schools as well.
All right. Thank you very much for appearing. Thank you. Up next, we will have Ms. Crystal Crawford representing herself, and on deck will be Ms. Brenda Dickinson from the Home Education Foundation. Ms. Crawford, you're recognized.
Thank you. I understand that there's an amendment to address some of the concerns with the instructional materials, but even with the clarification, I still have concerns, and I would like to take a moment to voice those. As a parent, I was deeply upset to read that instructional materials are being limited to only equipment for the core subjects. Lessons and classes are not the only valuable resource for homeschooling families for electives. I'm a mom of four. We have been homeschooling our children for over 7 years, and as of this school year, three of our children, ages 13, 10, and 8, all have the PEP scholarship. We are a low-income family. Though we've always managed to piece together a well-rounded education for our children using free or very low-cost resources, our primary motivation for applying for the PEP scholarship was the additional opportunities this represented for our children, especially in areas like art, music, and along with enhanced access to hands-on resources, because two of our kids are very hands-on learners, not only for the core subjects, but also for things like computer skills, foreign language, character development, and critical thinking. We were very financially limited, and it broke our hearts as parents to not be able to provide our children opportunities to pursue their passions and interests. The extra financial support from PEP allowed us to make those opportunities real for them this year. This year, we were able to innovate our approach to learning, and as a direct result of the PEP funds, my daughter, who loves to paint, was able to get paints and canvases and art books to practice at home with. My daughter, who loves singing, was able to get a pre-recorded standalone online singing course, which falls under the instructional materials category in StepUp's purchasing guide. Lessons from a vocal coach, but pre-recorded that she can practice and learn techniques at home. Some of my kids are very hands-on learners, as I said, and PEP allowed me to buy arts and craft supplies to take a non-conventional approach to spelling practice with them. So it has worked amazingly well for them. They've been spelling words with letter beads and forming letters out of pipe cleaners and very hands-on ways of practicing spelling. None of those things would qualify as typical equipment for language arts. One of my daughters wants to learn fashion design and the other loves sewing. I was able to purchase a child's sewing machine and fashion design books through the scholar shop, and they've been working on designing clothes together. They're excited to start a business one day. We were able to buy hands-on learning manipulatives to help my kids learn Spanish, a jump rope and activity cards for at-home PE activities, educational books about music, art, critical thinking, and character building, and more. All of these opportunities were made possible for our family only because of PEP funds this year. And almost all of these are electives, and all of them fell within the instructional materials category in the purchasing guide. Educating at home doesn't always look the same as public school. PEP parents need the flexibility to adapt their child's education to the way that best fits their unique situation, interests, and needs. If the legislature has given parents money to direct the education of their child, they need to also trust these parents to make those innovative decisions for how to use those funds to best serve their families. Art, music, PE, and other electives are important aspects of any well-rounded education, but the supplies and equipment for some of these are cost prohibitive for many homeschooling families, not just the lessons, but the actual supplies and equipment. I would hate for my children to lose access to those resources and opportunities that have been such a blessing for us this year. Please reconsider the limitation of instructional materials to include only equipment for the core subjects. I believe that this change does not align with the intention of PEP for the first place, which was to ensure that homeschooling children like mine and so many others would have access to the same valuable educational opportunities as students in public or private school, while also still allowing the parents to direct their child's education in the way that best fits each child's individual situation and needs. I oppose this bill as written, but I look forward to working with the sponsor to address these concerns. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Up next, we have Ms. Brenda Dickinson from the Home Education Foundation.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Leader Valdez. As many of you know, I've been around for a very long period of time. We started working in 1984 on getting the first choice program in Florida passed, which was the home education law. Since then, I have worked very hard to create opportunities for those children to be able to have access to many of the opportunities that public and private school students have taken and have the opportunity to participate in. I like a couple of the provisions in this bill, but I think it doesn't go far enough. So I'm going to oppose it as it is written, but I really look forward to working with the sponsor in order to get some of these issues that we are concerned about taken care of. For example, I think that there needs to be a lot more amendments to this bill to address the issues such as dual enrollment, extracurricular activities, Bright Future scholarships that the PEP students have access to, but they only have access to it in last year's bill with, it says, the same freedoms and opportunities as those students in section 1002.41, which is home education. Well, these other agencies that administer these different programs that home-educated students have access to had no idea how to implement that because there was no guidance in statute. And I think that one of the most difficult areas that we had was in dual enrollment, and the state colleges didn't know what to do. So we need to go back into those statutes and add PEP students and then add how it is that they're supposed to participate. So there are a number of those privileges that I've worked really hard to get for home education students, but in passing those bills, we worked out all the mechanics prior to passing the bill. And this bill didn't address those issues. So if you're gonna give them the same privileges, you need to amend those other sections of law that pertain to it. That's one big problem that I see with this bill, and it's gonna take a little work, but not a whole lot of work. We can do this. The second thing that I think is really important is for the legislature to take the responsibility for what parents can spend their funds on. It's as though that the legislature in some of the amendments and the way it's been implemented by the SFOs, they don't trust parents. So why would you give parents money and the freedom to spend the money, but you've micromanaged the expenditures because you've delegated the responsibility of the legislature to the SFOs? I believe that the SFOs need to be a funding organization. They take the money, they distribute it to parents. Why would you allow private schools to receive a lump sum of money for that child, and they can provide all the extracurricular activities and everything that they think that child needs, but you're going to limit it in a PEP program, or even as it's all tied together now in an FESUA. I'm really concerned that the limitations don't spill over into the FESUA because those are very unique children and their parents know best what that child needs. So my recommendation would be that you spell out exactly what you want these funds in the PEP program to be spent on. And it was a nice attempt in the amendment. I don't think that wording is quite right. But
I'm going to ask you to wrap it up, please.
Okay. So I think that limitation of the SFOs and not giving them the right to do the guidebook, which the two guidebooks with the different SFOs are extremely different, which makes parents not know what they can spend. The last point is we really need
to wrap it up.
Definitions. Please. We need definitions for the home education program in statute for the home education instructional programs. We also need micro schools. We need some definitions in this bill. Right. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for your comments. We'll now hear from Barney Bishop. And he is not here, but he is a proponent of the bill. Up next, I believe it's Keith Flaw from FLCA. Please make your way up. And we're going to go ahead and limit to 3 minutes, please, because we do have some others that we want to hear from. You're recognized, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Keith Flaw. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Florida Citizens Alliance. On behalf of Florida Citizens Alliance and our 260,000 supporters, we urge you to keep the HOPE scholarship. You will recall it was the Speaker Corcoran's House Bill 1. This currently is included in 1403 for repealing. I have been authorized by Citizens Defending Freedom, Florida Moms for America, Defend Florida, and the America Project to include them in this request to not eliminate the HOPE Scholarship. I have personally been involved with over 100 individuals homeschool cases. Some of these were traditional kid-on-kid bullying, but many of them were involved by misguided teachers who had been involved with situations of promoting DEI, CRT, SEL, and sexually explicit material or situations. And of course, COVID was a big issue, masks. Each of the cases involve a desperate situation with a distraught parent, a traumatized child, and a bureaucracy that seems not to care a whole lot. I am happy to give you specific situations if you would give me the additional time, but given that I'm limited, I encourage, the HOPE Scholarship is a very expansive scholarship. And it is important to keep it for three reasons. It provides an immediate out for a parent who's got an abusive situation for their child. The parent, all they have to do is file a written complaint, and within 24 hours, the principal has to approve that, whether they agree with it or not. The second reason that it's important is it holds teachers and administrators accountable for their behavior. Commissioner Corcoran used to say frequently that every parent who's paying attention could qualify for the HOPE Scholarship every day of the week. I'm happy to give you several examples, but again, limited on time. Very importantly, and most important, Chair, is...
Please, and I would ask you to please just direct your comments to me and the committee.
Okay. The issue is timing. A abusive situation can be dealt with within 24 hours. They don't have to apply for the HOPE or for the HB1 and go through the quarterly review timetable. It is immediate and an immediate resolution to the issue. It seems there are three key reasons why this is being repealed. One is low usage. This is true because the districts hide it. As you heard earlier, the 55,000 CESA reports prior to COVID, and now there's 108. Every one of those has a victim. The school district has an affirmative duty to make those available.
Go ahead and wrap it up, Mr. Flaw, please.
Okay. The focus in 1403 should be on penalties for not using it and offering it, not eliminating it. The speaker was very clear in his opening speech 2 days ago. The number one priority of this session is to protect children. Taking away this parent's tool to immediately protect their child from an abusive situation is aggressively going in the opposite direction.
Thank you, Mr. Flaga. I gave you a lot of extra time. I'm going to have to cut you off because we do have several other people that we got to get to. But thank you very much for your comments. Thank you. We will now hear from... And I apologize if I mispronounce it. Andy Sluschak, representing himself. Thank you. I apologize if I did not pronounce that correctly.
Sorry. That's all good. Sluschak. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your time today, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. I am opposed to this bill as it is written with the amendments. My name is Andy Sluschak. I work down the street. I'm a creative manager at a digital agency and SaaS company. My wife, Lauren, home educates all of our kids, although two of them are enrolled in PEP. We moved here a year and a half ago from Denver, Colorado, seeking freedom. We literally had a map of the United States and were ranking states in terms of a lot of different ways, a lot of different reasons. And Florida came up at the top, and at the top of our list was home education, the freedom to be able to do it in the way that we are convicted to do it, with a hard work, sweat, and a little money that we have. 3 points, real quick. One, micromanagement of fund distribution greatly hurts families and kids through the SFOs. Learned that one today. Two, equipment covered by funds needs to make logical sense for families and kids, i.e. technology. And three, subject matter equipment covered needs to be holistic, defined by the parent, and also make sense for the families and kids. So micromanagement of fund distribution. In short, we were really excited to do this. When we moved here a year and a half ago, we found out about it while we were here. And it became a real joy for our family to be able to add things to our home education that we hadn't had previously. We since became really disappointed. Basically, we applied, we got excited, we got in. Then instead of being sent one debit card, we were sent six. That was in August, September. At that point, we became unable to access any of our reimbursement money that we were told we would get. It's been since October, and we've been waiting to get access to the six debit cards. We were supposed to be sent one with one account. We were sent six. It took until me leaving a negative review on the Facebook page to even really be able to talk with someone who could help. And still, that was 2 days ago, and I still haven't heard anything. So it's an incredibly frustrating, very micromanaged situation where it's been 3 or 4 months and we were told we would be able to get reimbursements back for money, and we just stopped spending money because we know we're not going to get it. We have zero faith that we'll actually be able to get any of our money back. Yet we have friends that are doing great. And so it's just a very different level of treatment when it comes to the micromanaging of the SFO to the people that are applying. I have countless examples. I'd encourage you to go look on the Facebook pages of the families that are trying to discuss this and figure it out, because what is approved for one family is denied by another family, even though they both might be able to be understood as should be approved. It doesn't
ask you
really
to wrap it up, please.
Oh, nuts. Okay. So, well, I'll buy you a coffee or something, man. Sir. So, this part is really dangerous, by the way, because they opened an account, six accounts in my name with the debit card that will get penalties that I have no access to and cannot defend or figure it out. The equipment covered.
I gotta wrap it up.
We can buy online courses, but we can't buy computers. That makes no sense. Go ahead and use the funds to buy stuff, but you can't actually use the stuff that you buy.
Thank you, sir. And if you would hold on 1 second, I believe
if you want to ask me questions.
Our ranking member actually has a question, and I'm going to allow that. Ranking member, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for indulging my question to our constituent. Can you please share with us an example of some of the receipts that you are attempting to obtain a refund on? On
sir, expenditures. You're recognized for 30 seconds, please. And you could always stay after the committee, and we will speak with you and meet with you. But 30 seconds, please, very quickly.
Examples of things that we are seeking to get reimbursed for that haven't or... I don't know how that works.
May I, Mr. Chair?
Please, ranking member, we've got a lot to get to. We need to get through this quickly.
Just real quickly, those you mentioned in your comments that you have submitted receipts and you haven't heard anything from and you stopped spending because you haven't received any reimbursement. So what type of reimbursement for what items are you seeking reimbursement for?
Can you give us an example of one of those reimbursements?
There's clarification. Well, it was headphones so that my daughter could play the piano that we purchased on our own dime so that she could learn to play the piano without waking up the baby. And we did get reimbursed, and they went into an account. We just don't know which of the six accounts it went to, and we don't have access to it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And again, we might have some questions for you after the committee. If you want to speak to one of us or the ranking member, I'm sure we'll be around.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. And now we will go to Dr. Nancy Lothar from the Florida PTA. And please, if you can keep it under 3 minutes.
It will be under 3 minutes.
Thank you.
First of all, PTA rises in support of this bill. We appreciate the clarifications in statutory language and the establishment of procedural guidelines and guardrails. Thank you very much for the work, particularly when you were planning a wedding at the same time. As the bill moves forward, and it has two more committees, we have an ask, and that is to provide parents who are faced with decisions in making school choice with further information. In the case of a traditional private public school, a magnet school, a charter school, I can go on to the DOE website and see academic student achievement data for grades, for subjects, and for student subgroups. I cannot do that for private schools. In the case of finances, my school district publishes on its website the financials for each school, whether there is an audit exception or not, and that is also true for charter schools. That data is not available, and we know from Step Up's website that each year about 25% of the schools that submit audits have a material exception. So as this bill goes forward, please provide the opportunity to get further data so that a parent trying to choose wisely is able to make an informed choice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Now we will hear from Edward Briggs, Florida Coalition of Scholarship Schools. And you are waving in support. Thank you very much. Okay, and we will also hear from Ethan Merchant, representing Florida PSO. Ethan, if you can keep your comments to under 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm representing Florida PSO today, and we're a broad coalition of parent school school choice advocates that advocate for a variety of school choice options on behalf of their children. We are very thankful for the passage of HB1 during the 2023 legislative session, which opened up even more options for students and families. We know that you're looking at additional revisions to school choice and hope to be a resource so that families and parents will have a voice when education policy is created. As an advocacy group, we represent many online school parents, and we're hopeful that by addressing the non-sectarian virtual instruction language in this bill, that families will be able to access full-time online education in private or religious schools through the state's Universal ESA program. Virtual school parents understand that this option provides high-quality, teacher-led, full-time online school. Additionally, with many parents concerned about the safety of their private religious schools, a full-time private religious online option will provide families with peace of mind regarding their child's education. There's a press release and a broad coalition letter that was distributed before the meeting, and we look forward to working with Representative Tomko as the bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now we will read in some that are not appearing. We have waiving in opposition, Anthony Verdugo from the Christian Family Coalition. Waiving in support, we have Nathan Hoffman, Foundation for Florida's Future. Waiving in support, we have Ms. Jackie Carmona, Agudath Israel of South Florida, representing that organization. We have Ms. Angela Dempsey, waiving in opposition, waiving support, waiving for, yes, every kid, every child in Florida. Okay, we have Alexis LaRoe, Step Up for Students, also waiving in support. Very well. That is it for public comment. Members, we are now in debate. Is there anyone wishing to debate the bill? Representative Banks, and you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, we're bringing this the right direction. This is a big thing that we've done, and it is attracting people literally from across the U.S. to what we are doing. With a new rollout, there are a lot of moving parts. There's working through it. You know, I always have the motto, I don't want to burn the house to kill the cockroach. So in trying to fix the problems, we don't want to we have to make sure to watch over the funds that are responsible to us, and therefore we have to have some measure where we make that standard. And so we don't want too much, too little in all of those things. And so I have a measure of comfort knowing that we're still developing this going forward. This is our first stop. I appreciate those of you who come out. I know it's intimidating sometimes to come up to that microphone, and especially with that amount of time. But we hear the concerns and are thoughtful on those. So I'm going to hang on to hope as we keep walking through this, so I can continue to, you know, get my own questions answered and some of the current concerns that I hear. But I feel like we're moving in a good direction to get those things done. Thank you for the work that it takes to go through something this expansive and to get it done. So I will support it as we continue on this process.
Thank you, Representative. We will now go to Ranking Member Valdez in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Tomko, thank you very much for bringing forward this bill and allowing for some clarity and some direction also for the for the SFOs to be able to maybe somewhat have a guideline on what items that they can parents can spend on. One of the things that brought me a little bit of pause and concern was when we had originally a while ago the workshop, and we had both SFOs, and finding out that they really had two different guidelines of what they were approving and not approving as a purchase really concerns me, because then again, at that point, you know, you have, what if my child is into, let's say, music and learning guitar? Can I buy a $25 ukulele guitar or, you know, or a regular guitar for $100? Or do I go out and I buy this really massive, expensive guitar that maybe my 10-year-old will touch for a few days and then let it sit? So I think that as school districts have to be also accountable for their finances as we move forward and open this access for families to really have the choice of where they want their parent, their children educated, that, you know, we don't have a bottomless budget, right? I mean, so we have to be cognizant of what we spend and how we spend it. It's just like our budgets in our own households. I wish I could have given my children a lot of the different opportunities that are now being offered to families. So you learn to do the best that you can with what you have. So I am very appreciative of the vision and the leadership of this, all of us, all 120 of us, because at the end of the day, when this gets to the floor, 120 of us would have the opportunity to vote on that. And, you know, we're reshaping education in the state of Florida. We have to continue to be equitable. part of DEI is being equitable. It's not what the definition has been given. We can't go that route. I used an example yesterday of what DEI meant, and if you think of this as a baseball game, and picture this in your mind with a baseball game going on and a wooden fence on the other side, and you have three kids trying to look at the fence. You have a very tall kid that's able to see the fence with no problem and see the ball game, but you have another little one there that might not be as tall. Well, for that child to have the same opportunity, that child may need one or two milk crates to have the same vision as a taller kid. And if you have a much smaller kid that can't see the same thing, their tools and their needs may be a little bit more. So that child might need four milk crates to be able to have the same opportunity, an equal opportunity to be able to succeed. So when we use the words DEI, it's kind of insulting sometimes to hear what definitions are being given to DEI when intent, the DEI conversation is really about bringing about the real opportunities for all kids. Because in the eyes of education, all children are able. So thank you very much for bringing this bill forward, and I can't wait to vote up on it.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Do we have any other members wishing to debate? Representative Chambliss, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Tom Kyle, for bringing this bill. But for me, talking me through it and kind of answering my questions, I really appreciate it. And thank you to the parents specifically homeschool parents who reached out in bulk and let us know your concerns. Understand that we do hear you. And we do know that there are some unique situations and that we don't take that lightly. And so this is, the bill's first stop. But in this particular bill's sponsor, I can tell you that you have someone who has an open ear. And it is important that those individual circumstances be brought to our attention, because that's how we're able to continue to make the policy decisions along the way. That's why the bills have multiple stops, so that we can take certain things into consideration. I was hearing some of the concerns with the HOPE scholarship scenario, and I have heard both ends. And I would be interested to see how potentially, if you have bullying situations, can that situation be expedited for that 24-hour period? I think that's a conversation to be had. As does the current scenario allow for that, or maybe does something else need to be done to make sure that bullying scenarios might need to be taken into special consideration? In Miami-Dade, we have a very, very, big problem with bullying to the extent of extreme violence. So we definitely, definitely hear you. And so again, you guys are you have a bill sponsor that has an ear. We are going to be working on this, and I am definitely supportive of this bill, only because I trust the bill sponsor, and I know that we can get where we need to get. So again, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Chambliss. Any other members in debate? Very well. I'd like to say a few things. First of all, thank you very much to all the parents and everyone that came to speak. We know that this is a heartfelt issue, especially to parents and those stakeholders that provide educational services. So thank you very much for taking all the time that you did, and from coming as far as, I believe, Orange County and Okaloosa. Thank you very much for being here. Another distinction I'd like to make, the HOPE funding mechanism is remaining. We're not removing that. And any child could be taken out of a school if they're bullied immediately through the FTC. And I'm sure that the sponsor of the bill will speak to that. We are not doing that. We are not removing that. I want to make that distinction for everyone in the audience and everyone on this committee and listening, because I know that we've spoken a lot about this, and it is not the sponsor's intent to try to say that we're doing that. I just want to make that very, very clear. So thank you, Chair Tomko, for all of the time that you've invested in this. Something else, going back to equity was mentioned. I can tell you that FEFP funding, as long from the time that 25 years ago when I had to learn the financing formulas on how the state finances education, it is based on equity. It is absolutely based on equity. Every student in the state of Florida, And now, through our scholarship programs, we are basing all of this on equity, and that is why we are in this exercise, to continue to make sure that we put forth the very best options for education to our families, to our students. We will continue to work. We hear every single family out there. And believe me, we know that this, as she likes to call herself, this cowgirl, she's tough. And she will make sure that we get the best bill possible out there on the floor for all of us to recognize. With that, Chair Tomko, all I would like to say is from myself, from all of us in the committee and all the staff, and certainly everyone in education, as you know, and probably everyone from the speaker on down in the House, congratulations. Thank you for carrying this bill, but really, congratulations on getting married. We hope that you have a life with Mr. Piccolo that is full of love and happiness. Thank you. You are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, your comments, thank you for pointing those out. I have a couple things that I just want to run through, but first, want to just speak, members, as the chair of the pre-K through 12 Appropriations Committee, it is my role and responsibility to make sure that we are good fiscal stewards for the state of Florida. So anything that I am doing, it is because we are trying to balance the needs of our students, but we're also trying to balance the needs of those dollars for the state of Florida. So thank you all to the parents coming up. I know it's, as been mentioned, a very intimidating process to come up here and to speak, but I do want to point out that in terms of those expenses, when it comes to the students, they are still able to participate in all the things that we discussed today, but there are certain requirements for that child to move forward on to another grade level, and that equipment is necessary, and we have listed that out here. I would like to point out, too, that this bill for the FES UA students, so those students with the most unique abilities, we are going to be partnering with the Center for Unique Abilities at UCF to use their expertise to work with parents to develop and revise the purchasing guidelines for those students that are in the most unique of situations. So that is not something that we are just tossing to the side. We actually have gone a step further to make sure that they and those parents and those students are getting all the resources and all of those material needs that they may need in order to move forward and be successful. In terms of the HOPE Scholarship, members, I might not have children myself, but I like to say that I am the second mother to my twin sisters that are 17 years old. They are high school girls, so you can imagine school is tough for girls and boys, but especially those, you know, middle school years, it is a tough situation. Bullying, harassment, it all happens. And now with kids, unfortunately, it goes one step further. It doesn't just happen at school, it happens online, and they take it home with them. So it is very much an issue that I am very aware of. It is one that I want to make sure that we are protecting these students. We are making sure that they are taken out of situations that might become harmful. But the beauty here is, and I want to point out, it was said that 24 hours it takes for a student to get a HOPE scholarship. That is not true. Those students still have to apply through the Step Up for Students scholarship process. It's 24 hours that it takes for that information of the bullying to be sent from the principal to the parent of the alleged bully. And so the process is still the same. We will make sure that those students are taken care of. But in the expansion of school choice, what we did is we said, hey, parents, it doesn't have to bubble up to a situation of the principal being aware of this situation. You can read something that someone might have said to your child on social media or an instance that was brought home to that parent or the child that making someone close to them aware. And that parent now has the ability to say, I'm no longer going to keep my child in this school. I'm going to take them to another school that they will feel safe. They will feel that they are getting the education and not distracted from any unnecessary burdens. So that is not something that we are trying to do away with. If anything, we are trying to expedite that process for the parents and for the students. I would just ask for your favorable support. I know a lot of things were tossed out of additional pieces that should be brought into this bill, but this is a clarity bill. This is clarifying things that we did last year. And we have a beautiful process that if there's any other pieces of information that you think should come about and be brought forward to our legislature, you can partner with a member and get bills sponsored. And so that is still the beauty of this process. However, This bill is clarifying all of the things that we have heard from the last 6 months of parents, teachers, school districts, advocates about all the changes and that are needed in order to make sure that HB 1 can be enacted in the best form possible. And so that is what we are doing here today, and I would ask for your favorable support.
Very well. Chair Tomko, having closed on the bill, Andrea, please call the roll.
Representative.
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Bankson?
Yes.
Basabe?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia? McLean?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Nixon is excused. Persimmons, Malika?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Roach is excused. Stark?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
And Chair Rizzo?
Yes. What's
the count?
15. Unanimous. 15. Well, the count is 15, all in favor. So members, by your vote, HB 1403 will be reported favorably. Let the record reflect that staff is authorized to work with bill drafting to make technical changes. Congratulations, Chair Tomko. Members, that concludes today's agenda. Seeing no other business before the subcommittee, Representative McLean moves that we rise. And without objection, the meeting is adjourned.